Okay, let's get started. Boker Tov, everybody, of class 131 of our ongoing series on the Siddur. Okay, so just to pick up from a couple of things we left off last week. So we discussed why does Nusach Ashkenaz, we were discussing, of course, we're finishing up the second bracha of the Shmoneh Esrei, the bracha of Gvurotis, it's called, there's actually two names, Gvurot and Tchiyat HaMeitim, which sort of means it's the same thing, the power of God through strength, but Gvurot Shamim, the power of rain, and we discussed that from God's perspective, sort of rain and resurrection are the same thing, where our perspective, they're quite different. And of course, rain is resurrection of nature, and the Gemara says these are two of the three keys that God controls, that man really has no control. He didn't give over our rain and Tchiyat HaMeitim. So it's a beautiful idea. We put the great and the small, sort of from the amazing, unbelievable that we've never experienced to the rain that we sort of take for granted, especially living in North America, is in the same bracha, the Gvurot Shamim. And of course, then we had the whole debate, when do you say Mashiv HaRuach HaMoreh HaGeshem? Even though it is not a prayer for rain, it is a statement thanking God, because we're not allowed to make prayers in the first three brachot. And so we saw the machloket last week. Do you begin the first day of Sukkot, the last day of Sukkot? Even though Rav Elazar, who says you start the first day, agrees we don't want it to rain, but still that's when it theoretically should rain. Just if not that we had to sit in the sukkah, so it's okay to mention it. And Rav Yishai says, no, then you might as well mention it all year. That's Rav Elazar saying, I'm not praying for rain. I can mention it during sukkahs. Rav Yishai says, yeah, but you can mention it in July also. He says, yeah, right, but that's, he doesn't answer that, but that's already too far away. So, that's what we said. We're going to say it in the rainy season, not exactly at rain, you know, when it rains through the day. But we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua that we only start to say it on, Shmini Atzeret. So, and by the way, it's so important. This we did not mention. It's so important. If you forget to say it, you have to repeat the entire Shmoneh Esrei. You know, Mashiv HaRuach HaMoreh, okay, four words. What's a big deal? And you're going to mention it, Vetein Tel Umatar, maybe for part of that time too. Nonetheless, the halach is, if you say Mashiv HaRuach, or if you don't say Mashiv HaRuach, it's like Tchiyas HaMeitim, it's good. It's the basic thing that we have to say after we Tosh Shmoneh Esrei. I mentioned before, if I'm not mistaken, I hope I'm not mistaken, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik has a big chiddush that, I think most people were probably taught at a young age that if you forget Yalav Yavo on Rosh Chodesh, you have to repeat the Oshmon Esrei, right? I assume people were taught that. Yes. Somebody want to raise their hand and agree with me? Thank you very much. Because obviously Yalav Yavo is an important addition to our davening. And if you forget Yalav Yavo, you missed out on the davening. So you have to say, you have to repeat it. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is, if I recall correctly, has a chiddush that's no longer true today. And the reason is because why do we have to repeat? He says, basically we're doing it as a tefillat nedava. We're doing like an extra tefillah. We did daven. We already daven. So we're just davening to say Yalav Yavo. So I'm saying everything else. I mean, okay, that's how we have to do it. But that's, they have this concept. The Gemara quotes, I believe it's Rabbi Eliezer, who says, Halavai yitpalel adam kol yom kulo. It would be beautiful if somebody would daven all day. There seems to be a debate. This is the debate in modern times of the Hasidim and the Mishnagdim. What's more important, prayer or learning? So anybody who grew up in a non-Hasidic world views learning as much more important. Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam, all the things Torah. But then we know the Hasidic world put much more emphasis on Tfilah. And there is this idea, Halavai Shifaleh Kol Yom Kulo. And listen, I think it's easier for most people. Well, I think prayers are too, but not everybody's cut out for learning. And there is this concept of you have to pray. So you want to do a Tfilat Nedavah. You want to pray six times a day. Beautiful. Right? According to the Rambam, he describes it. According to the Torah, you have to have once a day. The rabbi said three times. You want to do 10 times? Great. Wonderful. So therefore, Yalav Yavo says, as a tefillat nedava, we say it again. But today, the halachic authorities say we don't do tefillat nedava. Halavai, you should have kavana once a day. And if you can have kavana, you can have intent three times a day. Wow, that's amazing. We don't want to daven too much extra because we mumble the words. We don't pay attention. Our mind is wandering. It's like the halach I said a number of times. If the first bracha, avot, Elohei Abraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov, you have to have extra kavana for that bracha. You have to know what the word, and you have to know what you're saying. unlike the rest of the tefillah. So the halakha is, if you don't, you were totally mind, your mind was totally wandering, as you said, Elohe Abraham, Elohe Yitzchak, Elohe Yaakov. I don't know if it ever happened to you, but it has happened to me. Your mind totally wanders, and you're mumbling, and you don't even know what you're doing. So you have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. That's the halacha. And yet the Shulchan Aruch says we don't do that anymore. Because the fifth, you're going to not have Kavanah on the second time either, the third time either. You'll never daven, you have OCD, go back 100 times till you have the right Kavanah. So whatever, you mumble the words, you'll try better next time. So we've changed a lot of the halachas because we don't have the focus on tefillah that is necessary. So Rav Chaim says we don't do a tefillat nedabah. So therefore we shouldn't say Shmon Esrei again. But you have to say Yalla v'yavo. Nu, Baruch Hashem, we daven Musaf. Rosh Chodeshim, Lamchan Natatas, Man Kaparah, Lechol Dot Adam. We mentioned Rosh Chodesh in Musaf. So you didn't mention it in Shacharit, so you missed out on a mitzvah, but you don't repeat the Shmon Esrei. So I don't think this is well known at all. I'm sure no one has heard this
yeah,
before.
Yeah, but that doesn't apply to Mincha. You don't have Musaf after Mincha.
No, but you mentioned it once a day. I think it's enough. I don't mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm doing this from recall. I did not see this inside, but, so I'm assuming an interesting question. What were Chaim saying, Mincha? My assumption is it's good enough that you said it once a day, but you might be right. Thank you for that. That Shacharit may not apply. There is a very fascinating question before you get to Rav Chaim. In the Middle Ages, when people would repeat the Shmon Esrei, they've got Yalla v'yavo. What happens if you forget Yalla v'yavo at Mincha and you remember at Maariv? You go to Mincha Maariv and Shul, and you don't remember you daven Mincha, and they daven late. Then in Chazaret Hashatz, the Chazan says, also, oh my God, I forgot Yalla v'yavo. I got to repeat the Shmon Esrei. But by the time you're repeating the Shmon Esrei, it's already Maariv. So, and when you repeat, right, there
when
is
you repeat it, you're not going to say Yalla v'yavo
correct.
any.
The halacha, we haven't ever spoken about this, but in halacha is if a person forgets to daven, he slept in, or he forgot, he's busy at work, whatever it is. So it's a very interesting halacha. The next tefillah, only the next one, you can daven Shmon Esrei twice. So if you forget Shacharit, you daven Mincha Shmon Esrei twice. If you forget Mincha, you daven Maariv Shmon Esrei twice. But what do you daven? What happens if like you daven the second tefillah twice? So if it's Mincha Maariv, in other words, you forget Saturday Mincha. You slept in. It's a winter. You went to sleep after your nice lunch, and you woke up at 5:30, and Shabbos is over already. So you daven Maariv. That's Maariv. And you say Atachon Antanu, which is sort of make that too. Atachon Antanu in the first Shmon Esrei. You first do the one you're at now. You're not first. You think maybe I'm doing the first one I missed. No. You daven Maariv. Now that I finish Maariv, I'm going to daven Mincha again, and I daven Shmon Esrei one more time. But I don't say Atachon Antanu. I daven the Maariv of Motzei Shabbat. Or if I forget on Friday afternoon, Mincha, I get late to Shul, and it's too late to daven Mincha. So I daven Maariv Ataki Dashta, and then I say Ataki Dashta a second time. The second Shmona Esrei is always the one you're at now, not the one you missed. So Tosfot, I believe it's a Tosfot, raises a very fascinating question. I mean, it's a simple, but it's such a cute question. The guy forgot Yalla v'yavo at Mincha on Rosh Chodesh, and he remembers at Maariv, but it's not Rosh Chodesh. So he's going to daven Maariv again. He's going to daven Mincha without Yalla v'yavo, but he already davened Mincha without Yalla v'yavo. In other words, the whole point, you have to daven over so you can say Yalla v'yavo. That's why you have to daven over again. But if he's davening it because he forgot, he missed Mincha, he's not going to say Yalla v'yavo anyway. So what's the point of davening over? So that's a machloket. I believe two opinions in Tosfot. Does a person have to daven over again? What's the point of davening over again? He's not going to say Yalla v'yavo anyway. So I believe it's Rav Chaim, as I say, I think the way I heard the lamdish, the analysis of this argument is that when you forget Yalla v'yavo, what does it mean? Does it mean you forgot Yalla v'yavo? I davened. I said Shema Koleinu. I prayed for wisdom and health and wealth and sustenance and judgment and all these wonderful, beautiful things. Okay, I didn't say Rosh Chodesh. So the halach is daven again. Tfilat nidava. Daven again and add Rosh Chodesh. Or you say no. If I missed Yalla v'yavo, it's like I didn't daven. It's like if you do 90% of the work, it's like nothing. Like often, you do everything. it doesn't count unless you finish 100%. So when I forgot the Alev Yavo, I didn't daven. It's like I didn't daven. So now I have to daven March. I'm not going to say Alev Yavo again. Who cares? But at least I'm going to daven again. So that's a interesting thing. It could be that you forget the Alev Yavo, at least at Shacharit. I think I relied on this once in my life. I believe if I'm not, you know, Mariv, I think I mentioned before, I have a bad habit of forgetting Alev Yavo probably 30 to 40% of the time when I daven Mariv. Why? Because I know in the back of my mind I don't have to repeat Shmon Esrei. If you get the Alev Yavo at night, you don't have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. So I forget it. You know, unfortunately, it happens way much. I don't know if it's that. It happens way too often. Shocking. Almost never, because you have to repeat it. So, anyways, but okay, Morris, you've had your hand up for a long time.
No, just going back to what we started with, Rabbi Men reminded us this week: if you say Mashi Baruch Morde Geshem in the summer, then you have to repeat the Shmona Esrei too, because it's a bad omen to.
That's correct. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. What about, I was mentioning, if you forget it, it's the same thing you say it over. That also, that may not apply. Forgetting Mashiv, so I was pointing out, if you forget the Alev Yavo, maybe you don't repeat the Shmona Esrei. If you forget Mashiv Baruch, you have to repeat the Shmona Esrei. What about if we say Mashiv? What if you, so the problem is it rains all year here. In Canada, it rains all year. And there's nothing.
We're not saying for Canada.
Okay, so we're you know what? That's what we're going to come to in 2 minutes. That's where we're going to start our show with the word. We'll address that question. Okay, so that's Vitein Talumatar, that's Mashi Baruch and Yalav Yavo. Mashi Baruch is really, really important. We are saying God is so wonderful. He grants us rain. Beautiful. So you asked me why Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfar says Vitein, what did it say? Morid Hatal. In the summer. I daven Nusach Ashkenaz, right? So, as you know. So, they say Morid Hatal. And in Israel, somebody asked me last week, I think Elisheva asked me last week, why in Israel do they say Mashiv HaRuach, why do they say Morid Hatal even in Nusach Ashkenaz? So I said, I had no idea. It looks like it's very interesting. So I looked around a little bit. None of the commentaries in the Siddur that I saw discussed it. They just mentioned that the Nusach Sfard says Morid Hatal and whatever, but I think in reason. So I found on the internet basically it's the same reason, but it's why does Nusach Sfard? This was interesting. It's what I said. It was on a shul website. Why does Nusach Sfard say Morid Hatal? So it just sounded very interesting. He says it's a Sephardic custom because the Sephardim are people who come from the Middle East, Iran, Iraq, I mean, Syria, Lebanon, Algeria, you know, they come from basically places where there's no water. The Middle East has a water shortage. Except for Egypt, right? And, right. So, so for people where if Mamish doesn't rain, you live in a Mediterranean climate, there's no rain in the entire summer. So dew is very important to them. The importance of dew, they appreciated it, the little bit of wet moisture on the grass in the morning. So they developed the custom to say Morid Hatal, the Sephardim developed, because they were living in places where they really needed, the moisture. James, I don't know if this is 100% true, since a lot of the first people who went to Israel, many of them were the Hasidim. So that's a little bit true. And I pointed out something very fascinating. Who are the first settlers, at least in the, but in the modern period, right? So when does Zionism start? When does it start with Herzl? Does it start with Yehuda Alkali? You know, it's, whatever, you know, religious Zionism started before Herzl. Herzl's only in the 1890s on the Dreyfus trial. You know, already, the Netziv is writing about it. I mean, you have, the other people you learned about, like in Bnei Akiva, so Tiret Zvi, all the Kibbutzim, the early Zionists in the 1840s, now I forget half their names, but, right. So, Tiret Zvi, who's that name for again? Who's Tiret Zvi named for? One of the religious Zionist rabbis. I forget. Okay. Anyway. So,
Hirsch-Kalischer.
Thank you. I knew that. Thank you. It's great. Have great students. Amazing. Thank you very much. Meir Shkalisher, a student of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, if I'm not mistaken. I believe he was a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva Eiger dies in 1836, so that is 1838. He's Rabbi Akiva Eiger, I don't want to get too off track, but Rabbi Akiva Eiger is the father-in-law, the second father-in-law of the Chatham Sofer. The Chatham Sofer married, had no kids with his first wife. And his first wife died, I believe he was in his 50s already. And he married his second wife, Rabbi Akiva Eiger's daughter. Rabbi Akiva Eiger was 1 year older than him. Now, his father-in-law was, he was the same age as his father-in-law. And he married, and he had no kids. He was in his 50s. And then the Chatham Sofer had, I believe, 10 kids. And lots, anybody, Sofer, Schreiber, lots of descendants. Comes over many, many descendants. So I know, I believe he also passed away from the Chatham's. That's my son gone, but that the Chatham Sofer passed away in 1839. Anyways, Ratzvi Hirsch, I believe he was a student of the Chatham Sofer. Now I'm going to have to check that out. Anyway, so but really Zionism, the religious Zionism starts with, I'd like to say, with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon sends his Talmidim, except for Rav Chaim of Valashin. He tells Rav Chaim, as I was told, do I know, does anybody know, that Rav Chaim of Valashin was, they told him to stay behind, to found the yeshiva. The Grav, the Vilna Gaon, dies in 1797, and the Yeshiva at Eitz Chaim, that's what it's called. Yeshiva in Valashin was known as Yeshiva at Eitz Chaim, was founded in 1803. So whatever. And but all the other students of Vilna Gaon went to Israel, so they were not Hasidim at all. But at the same time, a lot of the students, a lot of the early, or the Hasidim, also went to Israel. So it's very interesting. That's why I've said many times, in the land of Israel, we follow Minhagei Hagra. It has nothing to do with the Vilna Gaon and Israel. There's no attachment. It has to do with Israel was virgin territory, and the people who came to Israel were the students of Vilna Gaon. So you'd follow your teachers, your practices. So they don't say Bishamru on Friday. It's nothing with Israel. The Graf said you don't say Bishamru in Vilna, and you don't say it in Toronto, and you don't say it in New York. But nobody cared, because we had practices. The Vilna, no rabbi can change long-standing practices, even if you're the Vilna Gaon. They have to change organically. So that's why in Israel they do that. But anyways, getting back to your Moreh Tal, they were writing, since many of the people came to Israel were Hasidim, they just adopted it. But the truth of the matter, then I started, it makes a lot of sense. Israel also has this problem. Israel has this problem of no rain. It's a Mediterranean climate, no rain, desert, and we know that's how the Torah. The Torah presents Israel as a land with no rain. So God can, see to it that we follow the mitzvot, and they say that's what Shema is all about every single day. Vayah im Shemoah, if we listen, v'natati mitar. It's this week's parsha. Im b'chukotai te'lechu, v'natati gishmechem be'itam. I'll give it rain in the proper season. So there was a greater appreciation. It's a very simple reason, but I think, but it's a very, very beautiful reason. That's it. They needed more. So back to Morris's question, in a sense. So well, here it rains all year. Here it rains all year. So maybe if you say B'tein Talu Matar in July in Toronto, it's not so clear you have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. And which gets us, let's it gets us to part two of the question we were discussing. So in Israel, like we said last week, beautiful halacha, one of the halachas that I love, that we don't say mash, we don't say b'tein talu matar, we don't ask for rain, we don't pray for rain till 15 days after Sukkot, because some guy who lives, 100 miles away, who came to Yerushalayim with horse and buggy, takes him 2 weeks to get home, and it's not nice. It's not nice. So because of the eight people, or the four people who don't own a car, have a very slow horse to get back home, and it takes them 2 weeks. 2 weeks. You know what I mean? They travel 2 weeks to Jerusalem, spend a week in Jerusalem, and 2 weeks back. They just took off 5 weeks. 5 weeks to do the mitzvah. Oh, amazing that is. Beautiful. So we respect that, and the entire Jewish people are not going to pray for rain, because you got to get home. You spent 5 weeks to fill the mitzvah of Aliyah. So that's in Israel. What about us? So we know we don't say B'tein Talamat till December 5th. If you have an old sitter, if I'm not mistaken, we don't have the, anybody who has a sitter printed in the 1800s. Does anybody have from their great grandmother a sitter printed? Maybe your great grandmother got it from her grandmother. So print the 1800s. So you used to say Vatein Telemater on December 4th. In the 1900s, we started saying Vatein Telemater on December 5th. And in 2100, we're going to say Vatein Telemater on December 6th. And those who are around in 2200, you can look forward to saying Vatein Telemater on December 7th, unless the rabbis come together. Why is that? So this has
the Gregorian calendar.
That's right. That Julius Caesar and Pope Gregory. That's correct. So without we, I,
and 2000 didn't change it because it was a century year.
Right. Correct. Correct. Very good.
So a century year divided by 400. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. So the years, I'm sure many people know, but we'll do it quickly. We'll see how it impacted on the halakha. Basically, the problem is that our calendar, the Jewish calendar that we have, Tishrei, Cheshvan, you know, that one, works on a, makes on the assumption that the year is 365 and a quarter days for that, the solar year. And that was known, the Julian calendar. We have a leap year every fourth year on February 29th. By the way, why is the leap year in February? And anybody, it took me a long time. I didn't know this for a long, long time. Anybody know? Well, why make leap year February 29th? Like, why does February 28 days? Like, we have, at least in the Jewish calendar, you got 29, 30. In the English calendar, you got 30, 31, 31, 28. What's going on? Just don't have July and August 31 days. Make one of those 30 days and add a day in February. Well, what's shut?
Yeah, that was the last month.
Right, because the year started in March. Everybody starts the year in the spring. It's only when Christianity came along and they moved the calendar to January. It's a Christian calendar. We follow the Christian calendar, right? But the year started in March, so the year ended. They didn't need the days. They only needed 28 days. So when they had to add on a day, so they added in February. Okay, that's just a cute aside. Well, our calendar works that it's 365 core, but it's not true. It's only, what is it? 365, 5 hours, 47 minutes and something. That's very nice. In your lifetime, you're not going to notice it. 13 minutes a year. Who cares? You can live to, it's about 3/4 of a day every 100 years. So you live to be 100, you're going to be off not even a whole day. So it's no big deal. But in 1582, of course, famously Pope Gregory realized that it had begun to add up. So they were like 11 days off. Right? Makes sense. 1500s from, you know, year zero, whenever, Julius Caesar. He chopped off, I believe it was October 4th to the 15th. I think I once mentioned this before. That was once a question on Jeopardy. Once, I haven't watched Jeopardy for a long, ever since Alex Trebek died. I don't watch Jeopardy, whatever. I mean, I don't know how to turn on our TV anyways. It's too complicated today. You know, the ways they got three, but I don't know how it goes on. So whatever. So, once on Jeopardy, they had, you know, the answer is, October 5th, 4th to 15th, 82. So I wasn't thinking so closely. So immediately I said, what's a Seret Yemei Tshuva? That wasn't right. I didn't get it right. So that was, but I thought that was kind of cool. A Seret Yemei Tshuva. That's almost works out when Rosh Hashanah is really late, right? Like this year, Rosh Hashanah is going to be really late, be the beginning of October. So Pope Gregory chopped off 11 days from the calendar. The problem is Jewish calendar never adjusted for that. And what happens is, when are we supposed to say, so getting back to Mashi Baruch and Betein Tal Umatar, so when are we supposed to say, so the Gemara says that in Babel, in Iraq, the rainy season is different than Israel. Obviously, you're praying for rain. You know, you have to pray for rain where you live. When you're praying for rain in Israel, you live in Sur and Pumpedita, they don't really, it doesn't matter when it's raining in Israel. It matters when it's raining in Sur and Pumpedita, right? So the Gemara says 60 days, 60 days after Kufa Tishrei. That's 60 days after the fall equinox, September 21st, November 21st. So that's it. They used to say, Betein Telemater, November 21st. They chopped 11 days off the calendar. So November 21st became December 2nd. That's not so good. So they started saying Betein Telemater on December 2nd. On December 2nd, in the year 1600, I assume there also was a leap year. So it's only 3/4 of a day every 100 years. Every 400 years, like we don't have a leap year on 1700, 1800, 1900, but that gives us, if we had it in 2000, that would get us 4 days. We only need three. So the year 2000, if it's divisible by four, whatever, by 400, I don't know, whatever, then you don't have a leap year. Or you do have a... the year 2000 did have a leap year. I'm sorry, 1600, 1700, 1800, 17, 18, and 1900 did not have a leap year, and the year 2000 did have a leap year. That's why we don't recognize it, because we don't remember the year. I don't think anybody here was alive in 1900, so we don't remember that in 1900 there was no February 29th. But in 2000 there was. That's normal. But in 2100, if we're lucky, I don't know, maybe some of us will make it. Who knows? In the year 2100, there will not be a leap year. The problem is the halakha, the Jewish calendar, is never adjusted for that. So we went in the year 1700 from December 2nd to December 3rd, and then we went from December 3rd to December 4th, and then we went from December 4th to December 5th. And in 2000, we stopped because we had a leap year. So now, because we had that extra day, but in the year 2100, there's going to be no February 29th, but the Jewish calendar is not going to adjust. So we're going to say December 7th, December 6th and December 7th. That's the problem with our calendar. So, why don't we change it? So that's like, if those who were at my share last night, it was pinch hitting, you know, it's like a little pet peeve of mine, but, whatever. So the rabbis are well aware of it. They've been aware of it for a long, long time, perhaps even from the beginning. I don't know, maybe even when they started the calendar. But who cares? 13 minutes a year. And as what the Mishnah Berurah says, don't worry about it. By the time it's a problem, the Mashiach will be here. That's, what happens if he's not right? What happens if we don't do tshuva? Remember, according to the Rambam, the Mashiach only comes if we do tshuva. What happens if in 2,000 years we still haven't done tshuva? Believe me, 2,000 years ago, they didn't think that in the year 2024, the Mashiach wouldn't have come. I don't want to be negative, you know, you look at, but, depends how you look at it, but they probably assumed the Mashiach would be here. So I don't know, but that's the response they gave. No, that's why you need a Sanhedrin for, and then to have to fix it. So I've said many times, the calendar, thank God for all the fights, Orthodox, Reformed, thank God we have the same calendar. If we didn't have the same calendar, we would not be the same people. That's the end of Orthodox and Reform people are both Jews. We're part of the same people. Once we have a different calendar, like the Samaritans or whatever, once you have the Karaites, you have Shavuos every year on Sunday, you're not the same religion anymore. That's it. You're finished. And that's why Rabban Gamliel was willing to make Rabbi Yeshua violate Yom Kippur in order to keep the, and he was right. Yeah, it was a little bit mean. It was a little bit harsh. And, you know, they sort of impeached him temporarily, not then and there when he insulted him again over Mariv, whether you have to daven Mariv again. That's right. So, the bottom line is it was very important. So, you know, this, I mean, you know, this, whatever, at a certain point, Pesach is going to be in July. Like, and then we can't celebrate Pesach. You're not going to be allowed to celebrate Pesach. I know what people are going to do. So, whatever, but this problem has to be solved, but, it hasn't reached crisis proportion. We only saw problems at crisis proportion, but it's wrong. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's not really the, I don't know. It is what it is. It is what it is. It's inaccurate. And this is why it's inaccurate. Now this raises question number two. Is why in the world do we say the Tein Talamatar on December 4th, December 5th, December 6th? Back to Morris's question. Why don't we say the Tein Talamatar all year? Because it's very nice. In Bavel didn't do what they did in Israel, and we shouldn't do what they do in Bavel. So relatively famously, this was an issue first raised by the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, 1250 to 1327. The Rosh is the top student of the Maharam of Rutenberg. And the Maharam of Rutenberg gets arrested by the German government in order for ransom. Just they wanted money. Famously, he didn't let the Jewish community ransom him. You're not allowed to pay too much for hostages. That probably has zero application for hostages today because that it wasn't life and death. It was, and it wasn't a national thing, and it wasn't a war. It was a totally different, it's like this is the same word, hostages, but it's totally different. However, whatever halakhas you think should be, that's not for now. It's not the same as the hostage in Gaza, unfortunately, whatever. So, but he didn't let himself be ransomed because the Mishnah in Gittin says you're not allowed to overpay for hostages. So, and whatever. So his student, the Rush, said it's time to get out of Germany and teach. I mean, the Rabbi, I think, was also leaving Germany, tried to escape. So the Rush escaped. He ran away and, he runs away to Spain. And, It's not like today. He never spoke to anybody in his life from Spain. I'm guessing the Rosh probably never met a Sephardi in his life. Maybe there was one Sephardi who visited, who came, who moved. Okay, maybe met five Sephardim in his life. I can guarantee you the Rosh never went to a shul that to daven nusach vard, and it's not nusach svard, of course. It's Eidot HaMizrach, what we call. He didn't know anything. He came to a new world. And he arrives in Spain, and 1303, he arrives in Spain, and I think, and the Rashba, Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, that's the top student of the Ramban, Nachmanides. The Ramban dies in 1190, in 1271. His top student is the Rashba. The Rashba is the Rav in, where is he, Barcelona, up north, northern Spain, I forget. And he sends a letter to the community in Toledo. That's outside of Madrid. Madrid didn't really exist then, as far as I know. And he says, you have the Gadol Hador, the greatest rabbi of our generation, Rabbeinu Asher, the Rosh is here, and you're going to hire him as your rabbi. He's an Ashkenazi. So who cares? So that's one of the first times in Jewish history you had an Ashkenazi serving a Sephardic community. So he was like taken aback by all these like different customs. You have the same thing later on, the Meiri, when they moved from Provence. I mean, when Jews were forced to relocate, they came to Amsterdam. So there are big fights because Amsterdam's a Sephardic community, Ashkenaz, all mixed. They're all mixed in together. So one of the things that really bothered the Rosh, I believe he penned this tshuva. I believe it was on Chol Hamoed Sukkos, if I'm not mistaken. And he said, what's going on here? Why do they say B'tein Talu Matar on the, well, then it was November 21st. I'm sorry? Yeah, and he said, we have to change it because the rainy season in Babel, in Spain, the rainy season is different than in Germany, and it's very different than in Israel, and we must change our practice of saying "v'tein talu matar" or not, and that's what he said we have to do. And I told you the Vilna Gaon couldn't get anything changed, the Rosh couldn't get anything changed, and people said, "Rabbi, that's very nice, but that's not what we do here. You stick to give us a Gemara shir. I'm not interested in what you have to say about how we daven. We've been davening this way for hundreds of years. We're not going to change." So the Rosh tried, and the Rosh failed, and the Rosh, no, even though he. I don't know. From where I come from, of course the Rosh is right. You have to daven for rain, where you daven. But because of this, so I believe Rav Chaim has another chiddush that if you say v'tein talamater in Toronto in July, it's okay. You don't have to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei because it's not so bad if it rains. We want it to rain in July in Toronto. Yeah, we don't follow the Rosh, but you can rely on that. B'shalachak, not to repeat the whole Shemoneh Esrei. So we don't say, and I believe. I now have to look into this. I don't know if Rav Chaim did it. He may have been him or somebody advised that if you live, I don't do this, but you know why we don't do it? Because we're lazy, whatever. But they said that you should say, if you live in our climates where it rains all year, you should say v'tein talamater and shomei tefillah. You don't want to say in Baruch Aleinu. I mean, in the summer is what I meant. In the winter, you say it in where it belongs. But in the summer, new. So for whatever reason, the practice is not to follow the Rosh, to do the old thing, to pretend we're in Babel. Now, what we did is we put all of Chutzars like Babel. Like Babel is the template for everything outside of Israel, because our Judaism developed, Talmud Bavli developed in Babel. So whether you're in Spain or North America or Australia, you say B'tein Talu Matar based on the thing in the rainy season in Babel. It's not really right. No, what can you do? So, but it isn't. So some people are concerned it's not right. So say it v'tein tal umatar. That way you get both. Because in v'tein tal um, I'm sorry, in shomei tefillah, add it in shomei tefillah is a catch-all bracha. You can add whatever you want in shomei tefillah. So in Baruch Aleinu, we're not allowed to pray for rain. It's the summer. But when it comes to shomei tefillah, I need rain. I live in Canada. We need rain in the summer. So I'd say it's a little bit funny. I think a little bit whatever, but that's what it is. So that's what some people say. You should say b'tein talamater and shomei tefillah now because we need rain. So it's very interesting. Even though we may not follow practice, that's a general halachic principle that when there's a debate, even if we follow one opinion, it's not that the other opinion is no validity. The Gemara says Beit Shammai is no validity. That's very interesting. Beit Shammai, Kenegabe, when the rabbis decided to make the halacha of Beit Hillel, you have to figure out why they did this for another class. They decided to I don't want to say ostracized, but they decide to make Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to rely on him. But when you have a machloket, the Rambam and the Ravid, or the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says A, but lots of people disagree. So we do A, but you know, if you did B, we're not going to turn your life upside. The food is still kosher. No, it's not kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch, but it's okay. You're allowed to rely on other opinions because that's how the halachic system works. So while the Rosh's view was not accepted, it does have some validity. It does make some logical sense. But the idea that we follow Babel is very interesting. And of course, the idea that we're in December 4th. So you see there's a disconnect between the reality of what we're davening for and what we're supposed to and what's going on in the world. Nunu, I don't, what can you do? Steve, you have your hand up for a long time.
Quick question. Why would they have decided to use 60 days after September 21? Why?
I think that was when the rainy season. I've never been to Iraq, obviously, but somebody look it up on Wikipedia when it rains in Sura. I don't know where Sura is.
So they use the solar calendar.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We have a solar lunar calendar when it comes to, you know, that's why Pesach has to be in the spring. That's the whole problem with our calendar. Pesach is getting later and later. It moved a day already in our lifetime. Like the earliest and latest day, I think every, you know, couple hundred years it moved that it can't be any earlier because the way our calendar, we're pushing everything forward. So, because we're not adjusting for the actual 100% accuracy of the Earth's rotation or on the sun. But yes, we have to have Shavuot is coming up and it's Peirot Ha'ilan and it's Bikurim because it's the wheat harvest. So it's got to correspond. So that I understand we do according to the land of Israel. The agricultural things we in mitzvot relate to the land of Israel. But when we're praying for rain, when you pray is very personal. It is very difficult. I really have difficulty understanding why the Rosh's view was not accepted. Why in the world, Babel said, they'll argue, well, Babel is like, you know, we're all like Babel, halachically. But I don't know. I think prayer is not halach. Prayer is very practical. It's not, doesn't go by, you know, some halachic concept that all Jews are like, it's not a, it's not a prayer thing. It's like even when Yirmiyahu and Daniel, we discussed a few weeks ago, refused to say that God is Gibor v'Norah because they saw destruction and the Lord says, how can they do that? They said, listen, that's what we see. It's an amazing word. I spent a lot of time in it. The Lord says, God is true. And Yirmiyahu, the prophet, Yirmiyahu, I don't see God's greatness when the Jewish people are destroyed, are persecuted, the temple is destroyed. There, I can't say God is great. Moshe Rabbeinu said to say, it's in the Torah. Who are you? Who do you think you are? What can you do? I don't see it. So that's prayer. Yeah, that's praising God. So to me, Kal Vachomer, how much more so when we're asking for rain? Don't tell me they don't need rain in Babel. I don't care when they need rain in Babel. I live in Toronto, and in Toronto, I need rain. So I'm going to pray for it. No, but that's not the practice. That's why I believe it was Rav Chaim Metzger said you should actually add it in Shomei Tefillah. Okay, the Jewish people didn't accept the Rosh. Okay, the halacha has its own system sometimes. It's not always 100% with what's going on in the real world. But you know, we're going to slip it in Shomei Tefillah. It's very interesting. I know people, I'm sure people are looking at me like I'm a little crazy because you never heard this. But okay, what can I tell you? But if you think about it, so December 4th, 60 days, but that's what we do. No, there's something beautiful about Minhag Yisrael. We take what we do quite seriously. And sometimes we take it so seriously that even when it's wrong, we continue doing it. I mean, that's what the Rosh was saying. The Rosh wasn't saying, this is like totally wrong. Well, you're out of your mind. Well, praying for rain. You live in Spain. What are you praying for rain in Babel? Right? You know, but we know that traditions are very, very hard to change. And, okay, that's where we are. Okay. Any other comments, questions? Let's move on. I said I was talking about Atah Kadosh. Okay. Okay, so Gvurah Gshamim Chiyas Hameitim, all very beautiful, but it's just, I don't know, I just find this a fascinating topic. Like, it's just very interesting how everything, you know, reality and you know, the Rosh comes from Ashkenaz to Sephard, and it's not the only thing he saw differently. You know, he's like perplexed, you know, what's going on here? Wow, like, and you have that very often. Today you don't have it because we know everything. Today it's the internet, you know, before nobody moves anywhere before they visited six times and they, you know, speak to everybody and they, you know, that it's not like, but those days you moved, you didn't know what you were getting into and you never went back. And you can call anybody, send a telegram home, take 5 months to get there. So it's a totally Totally different situation, and it created. There were, I forget, the Sefer Magen Avot, I believe it's called. Now I forget it. Magen Avot, I believe the Meiri wrote it. I forget now. I really have to look it up. There was a Sefer written to defend the Minhagim, either a Provence, one of these places where the Jews had to leave, and they took these Minhagim, and where they went, there was a whole machloket there. All their Minhagim different. So I think it was called Magen Avot. I'm going to protect my ancestors, the Minhagim we have from our ancestors. And he wrote a whole sefer. I have to look it up now. I think 24 Minhagim that we're going to defend against what they're doing here. You know, people take Minhagim way too seriously. People take Minhagim more seriously than Torah law. We discussed them. Minhagim is Gehenim, right? Minhagim is Gehenim backwards.
You know what's, there's also a fascinating book that I'm just reminded of by what you're talking about. It's called Journey to Jerusalem. It's
okay.
About the Bar Tanura.
Okay, Marva Benjamin Bar Tanura.
Right.
Okay.
He travels to Yerushalayim from, or to Israel from Italy
right.
In like the 1480s. It took him 3 years to get there. And
yeah.
His father realized that he would never, you know, he's not, it's a one-way trip. And his father lets him go. I'll deny that he writes letters along the way. The book is maybe 100 pages,
okay.
But it is a travelogue of all the communities that he goes to. And he can, and sometimes he stays for 6 months because there's no wind to power the ship or a ship doesn't land. And he describes each community along the way.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating to read.
That's Benjamin of Mitudela. That's what he did, traveling in the 1100s, I believe. He went through.
Yeah, but he did it almanac to travel. This guy
right.
does. I mean, this guy, the Bar Tanura, does it in order to get to Israel. That was
right.
his focus.
Okay.
And it
the
is
thing,
the different communities. It is fascinating to read.
I mean, we today have homogenized, if that's the right word, our customs. It's very sad. We've gotten rid of Minhag HaMakom because everybody knows everything, and how, you know, you can't go against art scrolling. Everybody knows that. The rabbi can say what he wants, but if the art scroll sitter says X, the rabbi can jump in the lake and no one's going to listen to him. And the Gedolim in Israel say this. It's very sad. The idea that, we don't have a Mar D'Atras anymore. And we really don't have any of that. And we don't have local Minhagim, except a little bit in Breuers. We discussed the Breuers keeps up their Minhagim and the Hasidim a little bit. It's sad. I think it's sad. We lose something. Everybody said, I mean, look at the pictures. And Mark Schmier, you talk about it. Look at the pictures of Yeshiva boys in Slobodka. Look how Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky dressed. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And look, I'd say they wear caps and bow ties and plaid. It's like, so look how Rav Soloveitchik used to dress, you know, and a plaid shirt and, you know, ties, you know, colored socks, you know, like, we've lost all that. Very sad. Okay. Yes, Yocheved.
Okay. So I just wanted to point out that I think one area that we see the Minhag HaMakom going back for many years is Pesach, because many families have very interesting chumras, things they do, things they don't do. And when you ask them, it's because the grandfather didn't eat fish. For example, both my parents had a minhag not to eat fish on Pesach.
Are you serious?
That was the minhag.
Why? Because they didn't have a fish pot, right? Well, where's the minhag begin?
Because the fish may have, exactly the origin. It would be fascinating to trace the origins of each and the explanation, but each one has a valid explanation. It doesn't sound valid here, but there was a,
you know, all the jokes, yeah. We say, you know, because the pot wasn't big enough, so they had to cut off half the
well, whatever it is, you know, yeah. if you're celebrating tradition, then, you know, it could have an origin that doesn't sound so logical, but it is a Minhag Yisrael that people still are
so that really is a huge
so,
debate.
You
know?
You want to know the answer for the fish story? It's because they used to feed the fish alcohol in order to maintain their life a little longer.
There's always a reason.
Thank you. So that already makes sense. They fed the fish alcohol. Okay, there you go. There you go. But what counts as a minhag and not is really, you need like a year. Like this is like real, real. I mean, there's not, I mean, the first one, I don't know, the first one. Menachem Elon, if you look in the back there, you can see, I'll go get it. You know who Menachem Elon was? People know who Menachem Elon was? Menachem Elon was a tremendous
judge
who learned in Chevron Yeshiva. Let's start. He knew Shas back, or I mean, I never tested him, but a tremendous Talmud Chacham who learned in Chevron, and then he became a Supreme Court judge in the state of Israel. And he's the really, I don't know, the founder, but one of the founding fathers of Mishpat Ivri, which is how to apply halacha to a modern state. And he wrote a three-volume work. Here, I'll grab one. I think they translated some of the English. This is volume one only. Volume one goes to 700 and something, 800 pages. And it's phenomenal. It's an overview. I read this when I was in Grus, when I was in Smicha in Grus for the year. So I used to read this every night for like in bed for 45 minutes. That was my nightly reading. I should reread it. That was a long time ago. He goes through everything, Rabbi Shmuel, how halacha develops. It's really phenomenal. And he has a big, long chapter on minhagin, whatever, and how what's a minhag and what's a minhag shtud and this minhag. There's a lot. Danny Sperber won the Press Yisrael. Danny Sperber was originally famous. I mean, he was a professor at Bar Ilan working on what bathhouses looked like in the Roman period. I mean, he fascinating stuff. Realia, as they called it. His field was, you know, I told you once. I heard him give a fascinating shiur on how they used to invite people to parties in Roman's time. Kamsa and bar kamsa. How were invitations sent? Like who talks like that? So that was, and then he wrote this 8-volume work, Minhagei Yisrael, phenomenal. That made him famous. You know, Minhagei Yisrael. And then he's tracing minhag. There's a lot of work in Israel. Hakokim minhag medina, Zamir. There are all these people who work on minhagim. And one of the big questions that there's no answer, there's debate, is what's a real one? You know, like, you know, one person's minhag is another person's, you know, idiocy. Like there is a concept of a minhag shtut. Everybody agrees there's a concept that's just a ridiculous minhag. We have a minhag. We spoke last. We have a minhag. We talk in shul. That's our minhag. In our shul, we talk. So that's ridiculous. What do you mean you have a minhag to talk in shul? Rav Soloveitchik went so far to take, I don't know, call minhag shul. Some people have a minhag not to shave in Sfira. Nope. But Rav Soloveitchik say not to shave in Sfira, but that doesn't override Kavod Shabbos. That's some weird minhag not to shave in Sfira based on Yud Pei Chodesh that nobody observes anymore. It's based on the minhag not to shave in Sfira is based on as the way Rav Soloveitchik explains it. The minhag of Sfira not to shave is based on the minhag not to shave for an entire year when a parent died. But nobody follows that anymore. Who doesn't shave during the whole year for a parent? So the base of the minhag doesn't exist anymore. There's no minhag. It's the same thing why he says you can take hot showers in the 9 days, right? The base of the minhag doesn't exist anymore. So no, you want to follow the minhag? Okay. But not if it conflicts with Kavod Shabbos. Not if you're going to look at the Shabbos unshaven and, oh no, you have to trim your beard before Shabbos. The Rosalvachik insisted. The minhag shtut, I don't know if you use that word. The minhag not to shave in Omer when it conflicts with Shabbos is a minhag shtut, right? Now, obviously, you know, many people disagree with that because you walk into shul and you'll see people looking very not nice on the last days of Yontif Pesach. Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Soloveitchik felt you're obligated to shave the day of Chol HaMoed. That's already not just a minhag. That's going against the din. The Gemara says you're not allowed to shave. But the way today we shave differently, so the din doesn't apply. Once you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed, then you're obligated to shave on Chol HaMoed. So you shouldn't look like who knows what on the last days of Yonder. So it's very important to trace when we minhagim, but different people, and nobody did minhagim more than Rav Soloveitchik. Like in terms of lambda, Rav Soloveitchik would spend 2 hours explaining some minhag that he didn't even follow. You know, what's the base of it? Because according to Rav Soloveitchik, I mean, Rav Moshe Feinstein has this. There is a difference between a minhag and a convenience. Let's say now, I mean, today, I think for the first time in a while, we're going to make a late shower. Why am I making a late shower? Because my son's in summer school and he has an exam today. So the exam was scheduled from 6 to 8. The Shabbos today, Lech Benching is 8:35 today, I think, in Toronto. So it takes 40 minutes to get home. So even if he finishes 8 o'clock, gets home at 8. So they're letting him take the exam 5 to 7. Okay, 5 to 7. Good. It took a while, but U of T, even though there's an encampment there, they took, you know, they let him take the exam at 5 o'clock. So we're going to make a late Shabbos. So no, but when you make an early Shabbos, you go to shul. Let's say we'll take a progressive home. The husband stays home and the wife goes to shul, whatever. Okay. Now the person staying home, they don't want to make an early Shabbos. Do they have to make an early Shabbos? So people say, yeah, the husband and wife have to say minhag. You know, if the husband is Mekabel Shabbos, so the wife has to be Mekabel Shabbos, right? Didn't you hear that before? Have people heard that before? Idea, yes, no, yeah, of course. So what Ramosha finds, he said, not true. It might be true, but it's not true the way we conduct our lives. It's only true if you make early Shabbos in the summer and in the winter. So if in the winter you go to the 3 o'clock Mincha Minyan, you know anybody who goes to the 3 o'clock Mincha Minyan in December and their Mekabel Shabbos at 3:30, and they come home, they're home a quarter to four o'clock, and they sit down. No, they don't sit down. They sit in the Beis Medrash for 2 hours, and they learn. They have a shiur. They come home at 6 o'clock. You know anybody ever did that? No. So why do we make Shabbos at 7 o'clock? We're not so religious. It's not because we love Shabbos. Oh, we want an extra hour of Shabbos. It's convenient. Nobody wants to eat a meal at 10 o'clock at night. As a matter of fact, some people today make early Shavuos, which I think is a good idea, but we can talk that about next week. Why making early? I don't know. Any of your shuls having early Shavuos? Today, the minhag is not to do that. Oh, you can't do that. Tmimus. But there are shuls, Orthodox shuls, that do it, and there's good reason to have Shavuos, the 7 o'clock minyan too. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, it's a convenience. It's a convenience. So what's convenient for the wife and what's convenient for the husband are very different. It's not a minhag. I don't have a minhag to make early Shabbos in the summer. I make early Shabbos when it's convenient for me. When it's not convenient for me, I don't make early Shabbos. If you make it 52 weeks a year, then it's a minhag. Then the husband and wife should have the same minhag. So what's a convenience is not the same thing as a minhag. That's it's very important. It's not very often. It's not clear. What is a minhag and what's something you do doesn't make it into a minhag. Just because you do it doesn't make it a minhag. It's the Rav would like to explain every minhag has to have a kiyum of halakha. It wasn't just, I remember the way Rav Schechter would explain it to us. The Rav didn't say that every minhag has to have a good reason. You know, like, the Rav said it's not, of course it has to have a good reason. And by the way, the poskim say, I know I'm going to get into trouble. God don't we put alcohol in fish anymore. And when the reason for a minhag doesn't apply, the minhag doesn't apply anymore. Like, we even have that sometimes on Torah law, but it's assumed a minhag is a minhag only when the reason applies for the minhag. That's why I asked personally, I remember going to Rav Schechter and asking him, why do we still keep kidniyot? Because the reason doesn't apply anymore. And Rav Schechter like shrugged his shoulders. If you know him, you ever talked to him, I don't know. Like, because Rav Chaim Moser has a tshuva. I go, when reasons for minhagim don't apply, that's why I said gebrochs, there's absolutely no reason to gebrochs. Even a chassid shouldn't eat gebrochs. That would eat what's on. Because the minhag, it's not true. The machine matzah is better than handmade matzah. It's more kosher. It's more less likely to make a mistake with the machine than with the ham. Whatever, you don't have the issue of gebrach, but no, people stick to it. But that's how Rav Soloveitchik said now, that a minhag has to have not just a good reason, and as I said, if the reason doesn't apply, the minhag goes away. It has to have a kiyum of a mitzvah. In other words, bringing in Shabbos early is a kiyum of the mitzvah of kedushat Shabbos, of kabbalat Shabbos. So I'm fulfilling some mitzvah when I do. Let's say I don't know. Maybe I'm making this up. I mean, I am making this. Whether it's true, a person wears a black hat. It's Yirat Shemaim. It's a kiyum for that person. They feel, somehow it's Yirat Shemaim. Other people, I feel weird wearing a hat, whatever. So it depends. But so every minhag has to have some fulfillment, an extension of a mitzvah. That's how the Rav always explained the minhag. And the Rav would give shiurim on what mitzvah is this minhag, fulfilling and, then you have to think, okay, making Shabbos early, it's not a minhag. It's not really a minhag to make Shabbos early. We're allowed to do conveniences and nothing wrong with convenience, but it's not a minhag. And then there are things that we do that we claim as we do them all the time and they're wrong. So they have to be changed. So that comes up in halacha all the time. I can't think of now examples off the top of my head, but we have halachas that everybody knows is wrong and yet people still observe them. What do you do? I have to think of examples now. But so the field of minhag is a huge field, which is rarely studied, but that's what Rabbeinu Tam wrote years ago. People take, because minhagim are personal, because it's what your grandfather did, what the Torah commands us, I could do without it. I'd be okay if the Torah said I could eat pork. Like, if had the Torah allowed me to eat pork, I would be happy to eat pork. It's true, I would be. And the Rambams, I guess, I don't know, I never tasted it, but they say lobster's very good. All the Balei Tshuva tell me lobster's really good. And the kids in chat tell me the same thing, some of them. But even though I tell them, I don't want to know. But anyway, it's the Torah, okay, the Torah, it's very nice. But when your grandfather did it, when your parents did it, oh, So people take minhagim, they go crazy. And I get it. It's a personal connection. It's beautiful. But therefore, we fight over Narishkeit and this, and that's what Rabbeinu Tam says. Minhag spelled backwards, Gehenim. You want to go to Gehenim and fight over minhagim. That's it's such an unbelievable thing. Anyway, so this has a minhag to do. I stand here. Like we have a minhag to stand during the Aseret Dibrot. Okay, so here's another example. I've used this before. Rav Shachter told us, beautiful. Some people have a minhag to stand during Kriya Satorah. It's very nice minhag. It's Kavada Torah. It has a fulfillment of some mitzvah. But if you're in a shul and the rabbi doesn't have that minhag, it's a prohibition of Kavod HaRav. You're firmer than the rabbi? No. You're not allowed to do that. I remember Rav Shechter told us, you're not allowed to stand for Kriyas HaTorah if the rabbi doesn't stand. I guess if you went to him and you asked him if it's okay, maybe it's allowed. I'm not even sure that would be allowed because it looks bad. You know, you're firmer than the rabbi. The rabbi's modern Orthodox and, you know, I'm a yeshiva boy. I stand for Kriyas HaTorah. That's wrong. Go to a, you don't have to daven in that shul. Go to that shul. So you always have to know, like every chumra has a kula. You know, we always say that. Every stringency in one area has a leniency in another. So you have to be very careful with these things. I mean, what are the real halachot? This is, you know, Kavod HaRav is the real halacha. The minhag to stand in Kriyas HaTorah is very nice. And let's say even the Aseret HaDibrot, you go to a Nusach, not a Nusach Sparta, a Dot HaMizrach shul. So I believe the Spartish, I assume Spanish, Portuguese, will anybody tell it, do not stand. Correct me if I'm wrong, I've never been there, but the Rambam's minhag, the Rambam ruled you're not allowed to stand because you can't make the Aseret HaDibrot more important than everything else, even though it is more important, but can't stand for it. So if you go to a shul and they're not standing for the Aseret HaDibrot, you're not allowed to stand. What do you mean it's my minhag to stand? So we live in America, you know, in America, Isha Yashar Bein Avyasa, everybody does what they want, minhag America. It's a little bit true. You're not supposed to have in shul on Chol HaMoed. Some people put on tefillin, some people don't. Has anybody ever been to a shul where you don't have some people putting on tefillin and some people not? I've never been to a shul on Chol HaMoed where you don't have some people putting on tefillin and some people not. I think it's less and less put on tefillin. So that's against the halacha. Lo tikkoredu. You're not allowed to have two practices. Everybody does it in America. Why?
I've just gone out of a shul in Israel.
I said in America. Correct. Israel, they don't allow it. Israel,
you don't find anymore.
I'm sorry?
At Chabad, meaning you don't find anyone putting on tefillin.
Okay, Chabad. I don't know Chabad. I'm sorry. Thank you, Sev. You can always show me in on Chabad Minakim. Chabad is their own. They have their own little world there.
Nobody puts on tefillin.
I'm sorry? Right.
Nobody puts on tefillin.
The Hasidic minhag is not to, but in normal shuls where people are from all over the place, so everybody, so in a certain sense, I want that to continue. I don't want to daven a shul where everybody thinks alike, right? But it's really against the halakha.
I think there are less and less people putting on tefillin.
I agree with you. I do agree with you. That's what I allude to. Correct. I think it's less and less. Less and less people are putting on tefillin today. Even though the Raman, the Shulchan Aruch, paskins, you must put on tefillin. That's the psak in the Shulchan Aruch. It's like a lot of things. Things change. But I don't know if anybody picked it up. I said it before. Things change organically. The Vilna Gaon couldn't change it. But sometimes organically over time, it will become like the Vilna Gaon.
I think also in Eretz Yisrael, there's a minhag of some people who in Chutz La'aretz have a minhag put on tefillin should put it on Betzina in Eretz Yisrael. Just
right.
For the sake of, I mean, not to do the tzibur,
put it on the center. For sure. If your minhag is to put on tefillin on Kol HaMoed, and you go to Israel, and you go to shul, you can't put on, you should put on tefillin when you get home. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Shulchan Aruch passing the tefillin. This is one example of many. Now, we don't follow what it says in the Shulchan. Zev, you'll appreciate this story. Zev, because I remember when I was the rabbi at Bet Jacob, where Zev was very involved, and so the shul constitution had it written in the shul constitution that we follow the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch. It's prohibited to veer from the Shulchan Aruch. So I read that. I started laughing. I said, you know how many customs we do in this shul that are against the Shulchan Aruch? It's fine. That's fine. The Shulchan Aruch is the reason there's a Taz and a Shach and a Rabbi Kivager and a Piskei Tshuva and a Mishnah Brura is because we changed the Psakim of the Shulchan Aruch. We don't follow them all the time. So you say mental. It didn't say the Shulchan Aruch in its commentaries. It just said we follow the Shulchan Aruch. So I thought that was kind of cute. Things change. So one of the things that's changed is tefillin. Another thing that's changed, who was in Israel over Pesach here? Who was in Israel over Pesach? You kept one day of Yontif, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody today. Everybody in the modern Orthodox community keeps one day Yontif today. It was not like
say everybody, but the.
I would say everybody in the modern Orthodox community. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know anybody today from the modern Orthodox community who doesn't keep one day of Yontif. In other words, everybody from Or Chaim, whoever goes, they all keep one day Yontif, and that's whatever. And I remember Rav Schechter telling us already 40 years ago, telling us the minhag is changing. Even though the Shulchan Aruch says you have to keep 2 days, the Chacham Tzvi, living later in the 1600, the Chacham Tzvi, Tzvi Ashkenazi, the father of Rav Yaakov Emden, the chief rabbi of Amsterdam. He was an Ashkenazi, but he's known as a Sfart, Chacham Tzvi is a Sephardic appellation. A Chacham is a Sephardic term, even though he was Tzvi Ashkenazi. He was an Ashkenazi because he was a rabbi in Amsterdam, so he got that. Anyways, so he felt you should get 1 day, so that's become more popular. Things just organic. Nobody made an announcement. No post came out and said, do this. And Rav Schechter still holds you should keep 2 days, but put on fill-in on the second day. But I remember I once asked him, a Shaila, years ago, somebody asked me going to Israel, and they were going somewhere, everybody in the family was keeping 1 day. And they would normally keep 2 days. So Rav Schechter said, in that situation, it's okay, they can keep 1 day. Even they can rely. I don't know if he would have done that, but he said if they want to rely on the opinion, they're going to place it. Everybody's giving 1 day. They can rely on the opinion that 1 day is good enough.
Now that I spend more time in Eretz Yisrael, when we were there for half a year, 2 years ago, so I asked Rabbi Willig before I went. Mm-hmm. I said, "What should I do as far as Yontif?" He said, "Well, what's your game plan? So if you intend to spend a lot of time there, like 50-50 or about that amount, then right. He said, then when you're in Israel, you keep 1 day, and when here, you're here, you keep 2 days. But other than that, he also still feels pretty strongly right. that you should keep 2 days there.
As this Russia.
Until then, 100%.
So
until
I used
then,
to
keep... I had always kept 2 days when I went to Israel for Yontif. I always kept 2 days until I was there for this extended period of time. And right. we've been there for extended periods of time since, and I follow his talk now.
Right, and then, correct. A lot of people say if you own an apartment, right, I hear you. When I was in yeshiva, I did the worst of the worst. I kept what's known as 1.5 days. So that's the worst. 1.5 days means you keep 2 days, like you don't do any malacha, but you don't get the benefit of Yontif. You're machmir for both ways. That's, I think, where Baron Lichtenstein held like that. A lot of in the Hezer yeshiva that was in Hakotel, that was what many people did. A few kept 1 day, very few people kept 1 day. Today, it's not even a shaila. All my kids who went to Israel and yeshiva, they all kept 1 day. All their friends are keeping 1 day. It's totally changed. And I changed. I used to keep 1.5 days, and I then the first of them, I stayed there, and the last 2 times I was in Israel for Yontif, I kept 1 day. And I thought it would feel strange, but when I went with the second day of Pesach, when I went on Etiel, you know what? It didn't feel strange at all. And I like 2 seders. I like 2 days of Yontif. I'm like weird, one of these weird people. Like I love Yontif, so I miss having a second. But I don't know, when I was in Israel, it was very different. So I write things strange, and what can you say? That's organically, whatever. So yes, and you should follow what your local Orthodox rabbi says and whatever. But then there's the other guy. It's getting late already. But it's
this year they're gonna have something that in Israel they go crazy. They're gonna have 3 days of Rosh
Hashanah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You so know, they're not
for them. For them, 2 days is a lot. So
that's
3 days.
Yeah. It's I'm telling you, we had one a number of years ago. We had one of a shlichim couple. He was a Talmid Chacham. He's part of the sort of the YU Kollel. It was like the assistant YU Kollel. So they were the question is, Israelis here should keep 2 days. Oh, that's a whole other question. We won't get into it now. So we invited them for a second seder, him and his wife. They were, this is a serious Talmid Chacham. He's a Rosh Yeshiva, now one of the Rosh Yeshivas in Yeshiva and Har Etzion in Gush. And they couldn't take our second Seder. I think they left like in the middle of the meal. It was just like, it was the idea of a second Seder was so foreign to an Israeli. It was so hard for them. Like, we invited them to be friendly, to be nice. Anyways, okay, let's just wrap up. It's getting late. We'll continue. Please go next to you. So I didn't get to Atah Kadosh. I apologize to all those who thought we'd get to the third bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei. But we spend a fair bit of time talking about Morid Atal and Betain Tal Umatar. Why Nusach Ashkenaz says Morid Atal in Israel? Because they need rain. I mean, or they appreciate the dew. because it doesn't rain the whole winter, summer, so they're much more attuned to water, and that's why said Nusach Sfard said it, because Nusach Sfard came from those countries where they needed more water, and then that developed into everybody in Israel doing the same thing, and that, so even the Ashkenazim in Israel say more to tell them, Vatein Tolamatar, why it should, why a, the Babylonian, we have to pray for rain when you need rain. So in Babel, they needed rain 60 days later. So that's what they did. 60 days later is now 75 days later because the Gregorian calendar, because our calendar is not accurate. That's one issue. And issue number two is, of course, who cares what they did in Babel? We should care what we do, but that's not the practice. The Rosh unsuccessfully tried to change the practice. By the way, I once mentioned the first Shaila, Jason Schechter told us this, the first Shaila sent from the New World to the Old World, to Europe. Anybody know? In 1650s, the first, right, 1654 is when the first Jews arrived in the New World, I believe, right? That's in Sarna's book. See, they arrived in Brazil. That's where we are. So the first Shaila sent from Brazil, I think it was sent to Amsterdam, was, when do you say Vatein Telemata? We're in the Southern Hemisphere. We need rain backwards. Winter is summer and summer is winter. Do we change it? And the answer they got is no. You daven like in Babel. So in Australia, they say Vatein Talamatar in the summer, and they don't say it in the winter. It's, whatever. And that's just interesting. That was the first Shaila that they sent back because they realized they're in the Southern Hemisphere. Okay, so that's what we do. People, it's very hard to change established practice, even if it's wrong. Sometimes we justify the established practice. We can give justification for it. Sometimes we can't give justification. And even then, it's very hard to change practice because people love minhagim and they don't worry about Gehenim. They love minhagim. And that's what people do. And this is where Soloveitch said a minhag is not just something we do. A convenience is not a minhag. A husband and wife can have different conveniences. They don't have to do the same thing when it's a convenience. When it's a minhag, they should do the same thing. Even that's not 100% true necessarily. So that was, that's what we talked about. What else? The majority. Okay. And then we'll get into, Atakadosh. The fact that we consider all of us to be sort of descendants of Babylonian Jewry, I think is a fascinating comment. Okay. Just let me see if there are any questions in. Yeah. I'm sorry. No, we had, okay, well done. Okay, update link, the second link worked. Yeah, thank you. Okay, of course, please, for those who are not going on the Israel Day Parade or willing to come to the Israel Day Parade a little bit, even if you're going to the Israel Parade on time, you want to get to Fifth Avenue, when does it start? At noon? You can still come to the first couple of Shiurim on Sunday. We have a wonderful program. I want to thank the Almonds in advance. And eight speakers, half an hour each on Shavuot, Inyanei Shavuot. And if anyone wants to come to Toronto next week for the Walk for Israel, you're welcome to come. It's not a parade. We all walk together. They do it slightly different here. Okay, saying Vatein Telemata, yeah, then we talked about Yalla V'Yavo. You forget the Shmon Esrei, they have to repeat it, and maybe not, and can rely on these opinions. It's very interesting. I find it interesting. Maybe it's too technical. It's interesting. Saying Vatein Telemata protects you if you forgot. That is correct. That's the other thing. If you say Vatein Telumatar, no, if you say Mashiv Hat, Morid Atal, then even if you forget Mashiv Ruach, I think you don't have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. That's another reason to say it, right? It's not the Tein Talamatar. I believe if you say more Mashiv Atal, Morid Atal,
right,
in the winter, in the Eved, you don't have to repeat the Shmon Esrei. That's what I believe is Allah.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so that it would be another reason to say, but I don't necessarily think that's the reason to start it. The rabbi in Rothenburg, the Marmaridim life in prison was surely unpleasant, yes, but he was able to meet his students. Right? That's what I'm saying. You can't compare it to the hostages in Gaza. There may be something, but obviously, I mean, it wasn't good to be, but they weren't interested in killing him. They understood that they weren't, they just wanted money. That's it, you know, and the community was willing to pay the money and they were going to release him. And he said, no. So obviously, yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't there. I have been in the cemetery in Worms, and next to him is buried. Now I forget his name. I should remember his name. The one who, after he died, 7 years later, paid the money, a rich businessman on condition that he be buried next to the Maram Rotemer Cemetery in Worms, which is an unbelievable cemetery. Wow. I got to see in Worms, 45 minutes outside of Frankfurt. A big Jewish community, of course, until the Holocaust, an important Jewish community, very important Jewish community. So on the front row of the cemetery, the cemetery is all over the place. The front row is the Maharam of Rutenberg, and this guy from 1293. Maharam died in 1293, and you can still see the stone. It's pretty amazing. Oh, yeah, that's what you're reading. Sorry there, and he clearly was fed. He remained there for 7 years, right? When I was in Israel in November, they were saying, ah, that's an interesting question. When you go to Israel, should you start saying Betelumatar between the 7th of Cheshvan and December 5th, right? By the way, it is interesting that in Israel, B'tein Talamatar goes by the Hebrew calendar, 15 days after Sukkot. And in America, and the rest of the world goes by totally the solar calendar, 60
well,
days.
Well, that's the Mishnah and Tanis.
Right, I understand that, right? But it's just interesting that one is totally lunar. I mean, obviously the lunar is connected to the solar, but it's based on a lunar schedule and one is based on a solar schedule. Yes. Yeah. Oh, you were taught to say it in Shema Kalena. Very, very good. That's the suggestion of what I'm saying. To do all year here. Very, right. So that's very good, right? If you go to Israel then. Fascinating. I don't know what's fascinating, but I hope I'll have to thank you. There is a tension between the beauty of each group keeping its own minhagim versus the beauty of all Jews. Yeah, there is, but it shouldn't be a tension. On certain things, we should be united. But I think whether, you know, you do this and that, I one of the things I love, and we've started all our Jewish history trips, you know, that we do, that I had never traveled anywhere like besides Israel. I never really been outside of London. I hadn't been to Europe. I was in Europe once in my life, you know, and now I've been really Spain, Germany, not France, you know, Czechoslovakia and Hungary. I've been Italy. I've been to all Greece, Morocco, and to see and go to Dublin in these shuls where there's still people in these communities. It's so beautiful. I love it. It's very different sometimes, very different in our Dublin, and there's something beautiful. I don't know if I would like it every week in Toronto, but there's something beautiful and to have these minhagim, and they can dance together on Simchas Torah even from different shuls. But you're right, there can be a tension, and we have to work sure that there isn't. We know to respect differences, yeah. When the rabbi went to shul early in Berlin, he would send someone ahead of him to let his wife know he was coming home so she would have to count, oh, before he got home. Okay, that I understand, before he gets home. But right, she then didn't have to keep Shabbos before. That's interesting. Okay.
I asked a Shiloh of my local Orthodox Rav about this because we do early Shabbos. So he was told that I have, if my husband goes to shul at 7, I shouldn't light candles later than 7:15.
Right. So he's not following what I'm saying. He's not doing what I'm saying. He's not following. Ramosha says you don't have to do that because it's convenient. Right. That's the standard. Like if you just look, you know, clear. Yeah. Husband and wife should keep Shabbos at the same time. So that's true. But that's Ramosha says it's not true today because I'm not bringing early Shabbos as Kedusha Shabbos.
I hear. Okay. But yeah.
But I'm not saying you should light candles after 7:15.
This was a very big Kabbalah.
Light candles at 7:15. No, but you know what? What?
Yes.
Why don't you, I'm sure he knows this from Moshe. So ask him why he disagrees. So I'd be curious to hear why he disagrees with
Rabbi. Maybe I will. Yes.
It's fine. It's totally fine. It's great. Make sure Yocheved, you should light candles tonight for 7:15. Okay. It's okay. Like, yeah, whatever. That's a fast stuffing. They get to Mizmor Shir. They start at 7, and by 7:15.
No. Meaning that I was supposed to have candles lit. My husband only comes home at 8.
No, I know that, but when they accept Shabbos, you don't accept Shabbos to say Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. It should take more than 15 minutes to go from Mincha to Mizmor Shir.
But this is what he told me.
He was being machmer. He thought if you're 10 minutes late, this way you're safe. Yeah. Okay, very nice. Okay, many will appreciate the second Seder. We're so knocked out. At the first, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I look forward to correct. Okay, thank you. Many women don't agree with you, but I happen to like that. Okay.
Well, I got 4 likes over there, so I guess 4 people do.
Yeah. Okay. Why are people keeping 1 day? Is that question still relevant, or did they answer that? Hey, did they keep, we mean in Israel, because that's what people do in Israel, and you follow them. And the Chacham Tzvi said, you do wherever you are. If 2,000 years ago, if you were in Israel, you kept 1 day. It didn't matter where you came from. We're following the minhag avotenu. So that's the question. Do you follow the minhag as it was 2,000 years ago? Or no, we just follow it because we're not doing it. We know what the yontif is. We're just following what we do from our community. So that's the machloket, really. Do you do 1 or 2 days? The Chacham Tzvi said, and Rav Shechter, even though he says to keep 2 days, as I mentioned, said put on tefillin the second day because maybe the Chacham Tzvi is right. And tefillin is a din d'oraita.
Rabbi Kelman.
Yes.
I was told that the Noda B'Yehuda said that you should only keep 1 day.
Okay, this I don't know, but it could very well be. Yeah,
Is that Rav Lando? Did he? Was it Rav Lando who wrote the
yeah.
Novi?
The Novi Yitzchok Rav Yecheskel Lando in Prague.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
He's got to be in Prague this summer, and our trip. I haven't been there since 2011. Prague is such. I told you about Prague. The Altnai Shul is the most important shul in Jewish history, or it's the shul. No shul has a greater list of Talmidei Chachamim, Gedolei Yisrael, than the Altnai Shul in Prague, where the Maral was, and the Novi Yehuda was, and the Kliyakar was, and I mean, it's just one after another. It was one of the most moving davenings I ever had in my life. To daven, to get an aliyah in the Altnai Shul was just really something really special. But anyways,
I assume, by the way, when Rav Schechter says to put on tefillin, even if you're keeping one day,
yeah, of
you're
course.
talking about the second day of Shavuos or
Right,
Simchas Torah.
right,
We're
right,
not talking
correct.
about Chol HaMoed.
Correct, that's correct. Unless that's your personal minhag, and then you do it quietly. Zev, why we're keeping for rain, that's the whole question. That's what I was discussing. That's a very good question. That's what the Rosh said. Who cares about Iraq? But we don't do that. We should do from, oh, why not for Israel? Because we're in Chutzlar. They want to say all of Chutzlar is like Babel, but we don't follow Israel.
Why didn't they change that?
That's what the Rosh said, because they didn't. We consider where Babel is a template for all of Chutzlaritz. That's all. Okay, I do have to run, but I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom. Hopefully we'll see
Okay,
you.
one more very quick thing is funny story with Minhag. People came to shul one morning and they started arguing over this shul the minhag is this shul the minhag is
Right.
this. The Rav said, that's okay. That's
That's
the
correct.
minhag. The minhag is that
Right.
we argue about it.
Correct. Yeah. That's oh, you're right. That's the minhag to argue. No. So that's not a minhag, but that's a
Amen.
minhag, but it's a good joke. Right. It's a minhag to do. Okay. Anyways, everybody be well. You should hear good news. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat
Shalom.
Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat
Shabbat Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom.